Paul Harris. And joining me now here at our First Rule Film and Broadcast Center studio is Hasha McQueen, who is an attorney who is involved in a very interesting case, not one where her client is involved, but one that she is involved in. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Nice to have you here. You're involved in the first fight in Missouri over frozen embryos. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. Give me the background on this story.
Okay. Well, we were married, me and my ex, and we were geographically separated because he was in the military at the time.
Okay.
And so
Iraq or Afghanistan?
I think it was Iraq.
Okay.
So he was getting ready to leave, and so we decided we would try to have children. We were, like I said, geographically separated, so there was no way we were going to conceive naturally. So we went and talked to a doctor, and they said that the best thing we could do is to do IVF in vitro, because I didn't have any real problem fertility issues. And so they said if we did any of the other procedures that I might have too many children and that would be dangerous. So so we decided to do IVF, which is a lot more controlled.
Okay. Had you had any kids before he was sent overseas?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
So you go to an IVF expert and you create frozen embryos.
Yes.
And the notion there was when he comes back, we'll turn those into our children and we'll have a happy family life.
Yes, that is exactly what it was.
What went wrong?
Well, okay, so we created four embryos, okay? So we're not talking about a ridiculous amount, like 10 or 20 or anything like that. It's four.
All right.
And we had every intention of using all of those four. But at the time, you know, the doctor said you can't implant all four because that would be dangerous. And so we implanted two, and he said, do you mind having twins? I said, no. So they both took, and then we had our twin boys.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, we had finally came together and moved together with him once we had our boys.
Did you
and
have then, the boys while he was overseas?
No, I did not.
Okay.
No, that was all done when he came back.
All right.
Initially, we had tried what they call the turkey baster method, okay, because that's the least expensive. And basically, they just take your semen and then, you know, you can use your imagination on that one. But the reason that that did not work, and I tried to do that when he was gone, is because his semen did not survive the freezing process. And so it was, like, worse than doing it naturally.
Okay.
So they said, you're not going to get pregnant this way.
All right.
So that's when he came back. That's when we decided to do IVF.
Okay.
Because he was stationed on the East Coast of the United States.
All right. So you had the four embryos frozen. Two of them you defrosted into your
twin
boys.
Well, we actually used two fresh embryos. So we created them all at the same time. And then two of them were used immediately.
Okay.
And then the other two were frozen for future use.
Okay. And the plan was to definitely turn those into sons or daughters.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then the marriage fell apart?
Yes. Well, initially in 2007, when we had created the four embryos, we had to sign a consent, okay, with the cryobank. So it's like a storage agreement. And in that storage agreement, they had asked us what we would do in case of divorce or in case we both died or in case one of us died, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And we had talked about it, and we said, well, in case of divorce, I would get the embryos. We signed everything. Everything was fine. Then roll into, like, a few years later in 2010, my doctor was going out of, he was retiring. And so he said, well, you know, you guys are going to need to move these to another cryobank. And so we had to go through the process over again. And so we signed the paperwork. We, of course, had a discussion about it. Same thing.
And he agreed at that time that you could have the custody?
Yes, he did. And he initially, he signed it and he even said that in the trial.
Okay.
So, he also said that he didn't bother reading it, is what he said at the trial, which I thought was kind of interesting.
He thought it was an Apple end-user license agreement.
Right. I guess so.
I agree. I agree. I clicked I agree. Now can I have an iPhone?
Right. So we did the initialing and the signing and everything, and then things got – I mean, things had been a little bit rocky simply because he had a drinking issue and you know, we were hoping that would get resolved. It did not. It turned violent one night. In September, he hit me in front of my kids and gave me a bloody nose and bruises around my arms. And then at that point, I left. And I took my two kids. And then, needless to say, it was a very long, drawn-out, difficult divorce, which I spent a lot of money on. And I was trying to keep my kids safe. And I was, I was completely for allowing him to be a part of their lives. That was never, you know, my intention. It was just simply to keep them safe.
Okay.
You know. And so during that time, this issue came up with the embryos. And I thought it was not an issue because he had signed the paperwork. Mm-hmm. We had agreed.
Yep.
It was initialed. He said he signed it. I didn't think there was an issue here. And then it became an issue. And he's like, no, I don't want those. I want to destroy them. And I said, what? Like, it was never. Like, if you looked at our agreement, if we both died, we were going to donate it to a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Donate them to a couple. If one of us died, the other partner would get them.
Mm-hmm.
And if in case of divorce, I would get them. So it was never to terminate
okay.
the embryos at any point.
Okay.
And so he comes up with this, oh, I'm just going to terminate them. And I said, okay, since when? And
yep.
he said, well, you know, I just don't want to have any more kids with you. I said, well, I think it's a little bit late for that, right? I mean, we created these lives on purpose, not by accident,
mm-hmm.
right? We weren't in the backseat of a car
mm-hmm.
and had a moment of passion, and it's happened. That's not the case.
Yep.
It's a very unique case in that it was very deliberate. IVF is a deliberate process.
Yep. So you go to court.
Mm.
And the judge looks at the paperwork that says you get the custody of the embryos
mm-hmm.
and says you don't get the custody of the embryos.
Right. That's exactly what happened.
Why? What was the judge's justification for that?
Well, what people don't realize about the law, and I didn't realize it until I was put in the situation. I did a lot of research. I read a lot of case law. There's only about maybe 12 cases total in the United States that have gone to the appellate level or above.
Okay.
Okay. Not a lot of cases since IVF started. And all these cases, there's something very telling about these cases because what they do is there's different approaches. So you have like a contractual approach where you look at the contract and it says, hey, you know, you did this, fine.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to decide that. Then you have this balancing approach where you balance the interests of one party against the other party. And it's never the interest of the embryos, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the interest of the father or the mother.
Right.
So what I found is in cases where there was an agreement to give the embryos to one of the parties, the courts decided in those cases to not enforce the agreement. Okay? But if it was to terminate the embryos, then they upheld the agreement.
Okay.
Okay, so this is very pervasive. This is something that the courts have decided to do because there's no legislation on this.
Is the court's rationale in those multiple cases, we don't want to force somebody to become a parent against their will?
Yes. That is one of the arguments. And
okay.
they use the 14th Amendment, privacy, right to procreate, right not to procreate, which
mm-hmm.
is what they've read into the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think that argument is weak. And the reason it's so weak is because when you do IVF, when you have two people that come together and decide to create a child,
mm-hmm.
like I said, not by accident, but on purpose,
yep.
then that person has decided to be a parent. It's completely different than the abortion issue. And what I find is when I talk about this, people want to throw in, you know, right not to be a parent, right to this, or whatever. Well, we're past that. I mean, to me, in my mind, you're past that when you decide to go through $10,000 to $20,000 of a process, because it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You go through a lot of needle poking, which I don't have a fetish for needles.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, that's not one of those things I like to do.
Okay.
And there's a lot of appointments, and there's a lot of paperwork, and there's a lot of deliberate thought behind this. And then at the end of the day, after you have signed something that says that you are going to give it to one of the partners, to all of a sudden walk away with no responsibility is atrocious.
Okay, let me just play devil's advocate
sure.
here for a second.
I like that.
The representative for the father tells the court, yes, he did voluntarily agree to make these four embryos. Two of them became the twin boys. Two of them were frozen for later use. But we made those four embryos because we weren't sure if any of the embryos were going to take at all. And we knew we needed to make extra embryos. And then once those extra embryos weren't needed because we had the twin boys and our partnership as a couple broke up, I didn't want to have those become children that I didn't want to have with this person who I no longer even liked.
Right.
How's that argument?
That's okay, but it still breaks down because my agreement, unlike some of the other agreements in other case law, is not that there it was ambiguous. There wasn't ambiguity on this.
Mm-hmm.
This was saying what to do in case of divorce, right? And mm-hmm. some of the case law that you see, the agreements are completely ambiguous. Like they say, well, you can't use it without mutual consent. And then that was it. Mine isn't that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is very specific. And so if you are going to make an argument that you did not foresee divorce happening, well, you agreed that if there was a divorce and we were not married anymore, that I would be able to use the embryos.
Okay, which leads me to my next question. Why do you want to have these children that are from this man who I'm gathering you don't get along with and who beat you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Why would you want those children with those genes?
Well, you know, I have two sons now.
Yes, I know.
And there'd be no way that I would want to undo what I had done with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it's the same thing in my mind. You know, it's interesting when we have this conversation because they are in a petri dish, all of a sudden it becomes a different issue when I'm still a mother, you know, I still love my children,
mm-hmm.
even my unborn children. You know, if a mother at like 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of pregnancy loses her child, do people say, well, don't worry about it. It's just a clump of tissue or it's not a big deal. No, they say, I'm so sorry you lost your baby,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But in this conversation, somehow that gets lost. And people say, well, why would you want to do this? Well, why would you want to do that? Well, it's my children.
So you consider the frozen embryos to be your children.
Absolutely, just like any mother would.
Even in that state.
Yes.
And even though they're still connected to this man.
Yes.
Okay.
Because my two current children are connected to this man, and there's no way that I would want to
And he's
that.
Still in their lives, right?
He is.
Okay. So what happens now? You're taking it to the appellate court. You lost at the first level in the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening now?
We filed a notice of appeal on June 25th. So we took it to the appellate court. And now we're just going through the process at this point, deciding what's going to be on the record and what the appellate court's going to review.
Okay. You're also part of a group that started the hashtag Embryo Defense.
Yes.
And which has done a couple of other things that I don't have time to get into here today. But I'm curious how you feel about parents who are in the situation you're in, who then decide, yes, we created those embryos in the hopes that we would make a child later, but we mutually decided we're not going to do that, and they have those embryos destroyed.
You know, I'm probably the last person in the world I would think would ever be pro-life, because I was pro-choice for a very long time in my life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the way that pro-choice people talk, okay? But I will say this. When I had a miscarriage at 16 weeks,
okay.
And I held my little baby in my hand,
mm-hmm.
and it's a human, you know, it's a little baby, and there's nothing that can take that out of my mind, you know? We have been... I think in this country, what's really sad is that we have had a conversation, trying to have a conversation with two sides that are talking different languages.
Mm-hmm.
Pro-choice people, if you say pro-life, they think they're religious zealots. If you say pro-choice to a pro-life person, they think they're a baby killer.
Mm-hmm.
There's two complete conversations going on, and they're not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my group... I've talked to many, many women and men across the United States that are going through this or have gone through it and have lost children in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very grueling and it's very sad. And those are the things that people are not hearing. You know, to be able to want to save your children and not be able to. These are wanted children.
Mm-hmm.
These are not unwanted pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
These are children that are being fought for. And to lose that fight is like seeing your child drowning and you cannot save them.
Mm.
I mean, it is that emotional for people. And people don't hear those stories. People just say, well, you know, it's cut and dry or whatever, or why do you care? You know, well, these are real human emotions behind this and real people behind this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lonely process because I didn't know anybody that was going through this except like Nick Loeb and Sofia Vergara,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I didn't know either one of those
yep.
people. And now we have another case in California, Mimi Lee and Findley, that are going through it. And she had cancer. You have Carla Dunstan in Illinois, who actually won her case. And the court gave her the embryos, even though they didn't have an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people going through this that feel very alone. And so what I've done is I've created a one-of-a-kind nonprofit organization to network those people together to provide resources for people that want to save embryos.
And for people who want more information on that, they can go to what website?
It's embryodefense.org.
There you go.
And it's a work in progress, but we're getting there.
All right. Hasha, it's a fascinating story. You and I may not agree 100% on this issue, but I'm glad you told your story here today. And I wish you good luck and you get the outcome that you want.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.